You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
The Tour de France, the famed 22-day grueling cycling race, gets underway this Saturday. But since this past Monday, Sundance Channel has been celebrating the race with the U.S. television debut of Blood, Sweat, and Gears, Racing Clean to the Tour de France, a film that provides an inside look at a recently established professional cycling team based in Colorado. The team qualified and raced in last year's tour and has led the way in anti-doping programs. Here to talk about the film is its producer and director, Nick Davis. Welcome to our show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Are you a cycling fan?
I have not been until this film, no.
So why did you even do this, and why did you pick the Garmin Chipotle team to focus on, although I guess its name has changed more recently?
Yeah. Originally, it was just Team Slipstream was the name they were giving it. I am a lifelong baseball fan and never really thought I would come across athletes who interested me nearly as much as baseball players do. And a few years ago, did a cycling project for then Versus, and was fascinated by the cyclists. I found them intelligent and smart and kind of like chess players in a way where I had never really thought about it. That project didn't really pan out, but then when I heard about a team that was committed to riding clean, and, you know, I knew what most people knew, which is that every cyclist dopes and it must be horrible and all that, I jumped at the chance to try and follow them.
But everybody claims that they're going to ride clean.
Yes, although this team did it differently. They had a third-party drug testing program in place that was so rigorous and constant that it seemed like you'd have to be really self-destructive to sign up for it, unless you were really committed to riding clean.
And one of the members of the team had had doping problems in the past.
Yeah, David Miller was a British national champion, fabulous rider, and also a really interesting, smart, very suave, sort of Pierce Brosnan character. And he had been caught doping. And unlike just about every other cyclist, he admitted it. Most of them, when they're caught or when they test positive, they say, well, there was a problem. He said, no, yep, you got me. And he served 2 years suspension and came back committed to helping young cyclists not do what he did, which is get tempted. Because when everyone around you is doping, it's very hard to resist.
Now, he's British.
Yeah.
Other members of the team come from other parts of the world. But this is an American team. How does that work?
It's intricate and confusing.
Is that true in teams, in most of the teams? Would a French team include people from the Netherlands and Poland and,
might.
Russia?
It might. More likely because any American riders who want to ride at a top level are going to ride for the European teams.
Really? Lance Armstrong didn't turn all that around?
Well, he did for the time, you know, for a brief period of time. But then when he left the sport, Discovery disbanded their team. U.S. Postal disbanded their team, I mean. And so there was no real American team. And Jonathan Vaughters, JV, the coach of Slipstream, he wanted to form an American team. And he did. And they did have to reach outside America to get some of their top riders. But most of the team is American.
Well, we can point out that Lance Armstrong is racing for Kazakhstan this year.
Yes, yes. It's crazy.
That's because no American team wanted him. I mean, he is both somebody we can be proud of, but also somebody who obviously confuses us in the same way that a Barry Bonds confuses us.
Yeah. To me, when I would ask people, because our project had nothing to do with Lance Armstrong, but I would, you know, talk to people about cycling and talk to people about Lance Armstrong, he is spoken of as some kind of combination of Babe Ruth and Adolf Hitler. There is more fear in talking about Lance Armstrong, and if you don't know the sport, you don't know why.
Well, part of the problem also is that these teams are built around a leader, aren't they?
Yes.
And so everybody's expected to sacrifice for the star. And when it was Lance Armstrong, whether he was having a good day or a bad day, it didn't matter. The other team members had to sacrifice for him. And we see the same sort of thing happen here, only the way things turn out, that doesn't really matter.
Yeah, I think there are certain teams where the leader is really clear. And any team that had Lance Armstrong, the original Lance Armstrong, not Lance today, who I gather is not going to be riding as the leader of his team in this year's tour. But any team that has a clear leader has to defer to that leader. Slipstream went into the Tour de France in 2008 with David Miller as pretty much the leader.
And everybody was going to sacrifice to help him win.
To help him win, to help him and protect him and make him not have to ride as hard. And something pretty interesting happens during the course of the race, which is that another Slipstream rider actually kind of eclipses him, and Miller has to kind of come to accept and then support that.
And that rider is now one of the stars of racing.
Christian Vandeveld. Yeah.
Also not an American-born rider.
No, but he is American. Oh. His father was actually in Breaking Away.
Ah.
Yeah. But I think maybe he comes from Belgium originally.
Now, this team was new, so it had no guarantee that it was actually going to be invited to the Tour de France. You have to be invited?
You have to be invited, and it is very crazy and political, and it's like getting an invitation to the White House. It's not like if you are in third place or better, you're going to go to the playoffs.
So they entered the Tour de Qatar, the Tour of California, and other races in hopes of establishing themselves and gaining recognition and respect.
They had to prove to the governing body of the Tour de France, the ASO, that they had the goods to not just race in the Tour de France, but race competitively and do well.
So when you started filming, you had no guarantee that they were going to even make it to the Tour de France.
No, I had a lot of confident athletes and team management telling me, I think we're going to do it. We really think we're going to do it. And I thought, it's a great ending if they make it to the Tour de France, but it's not a terrible ending if they don't.
You just have a lot of footage of people failing.
well, the film would have been structured differently. You know, to the extent that there's suspense in watching the film as to whether or not they're going to make the tour, if you know it's a 90-minute film, you can kind of guess that they're going to get in. Given that, you know, the first 45 minutes are they going to make it or not? So that would have been different.
Well, there are other things that you include in the film. It's not just all about racing. In fact, we get a really good look at how cycling teams have to work hard to get sponsors.
Yes.
How expensive is this? You get a bike and you ride, don't you?
It's unbelievably expensive, in the millions and millions of dollars. I mean, there are hundreds of bikes, and each of them has a time trial bike, which is different from their normal bike, and they have all these uniforms. They're supported by a staff of about 50 people, soigneurs and masseuses and doctors and mechanics, and it's a sort of a traveling carnival of people, and it's a huge logistical nightmare organizing the team, because sometimes half the team is over in Qatar racing in the Tour of Qatar, and half of them is in Missouri racing in some race that we haven't heard of.
And the soigneurs include, in some cases, spouses of the riders, because this is a very difficult life, and it's hard to keep a marriage going, it seems, but it's also hard to stay out of the hospital. The point is made that that people break their collarbones regularly.
Yeah, you're not. One of the riders says you're not a professional cyclist until you've broken your collarbone. And this is coming from someone who's broken his collarbone four times.
And as we follow the team through the races leading up to the tour, we see team members watching footage of the races, even laughing when one of the members has a serious fall.
Yeah, that was a scene that I found kind of chilling. The first time you watch the footage of, you know, these hardened athletes watching another guy break on their team, break his collarbone, and they're laughing uproariously and replaying it, just loving the sort of, you know, the Spike TV aspect of it. And, you know, they knew he was okay. That's the way I can justify it to myself.
How did they respond to the intrusiveness of your filming? Because they had all this other stuff that they had to do. And as a new team, I'm sure they had more problems than a team that had been doing this year after year after year.
Yeah, I don't know if that's true. I think every cycling team has it pretty tough. I think it's a very difficult sport. They responded very well. I mean, as with most subjects, they kind of forget the camera's there, and then we'll look up and sort of realize, oh boy, I've really been cursing a lot, you know. But I think they do curse a lot. They curse a lot, which you really find out a lot if you show it to your 9-year-old daughter.
Yeah, the film would be perfect for kids, except for the cursing.
Yes.
And there's no way, you just can't bleep everything.
No, you can't.
Christian Van de Velde, the top performing rider as the season developed, finished in fifth place overall in the tour, but fourth place after another rider tested positive for doping. Do people say that's fine? I really came in fourth, and hope that somebody else is caught doping so they go up to third or second, or does it kind of taint that position?
Oh, I don't think it taints it. I wonder if you ask Christian, "How'd you do last year? What'd you finish?" Whether he would say,
wouldn't
fifth,
say
or fourth.
Fifth, but then fourth.
He might just say fifth. I don't know what he would say.
The doping thing continues. You'd think that by now they'd all know that they're going to be tested and they'd stop doing this sort of thing.
You would, and I think you should have a psychiatrist on to talk about why the Manny Ramirez's and these people still do it. I think there's just so much money involved and so much pressure on them, we can't even imagine.
Well, there is a difference here, and it's pointed out in the film, that this is perhaps the most grueling sport in the world. It's like running a marathon every day, and then you're expected also to run some sprints.
Yes, yeah, run a marathon.
Over a rough track.
Right, run a marathon with the risk of getting thrown out of a speeding car and, you know, at any minute, and then some sprints, and then rest, and then tomorrow do it again, and do it for 3 weeks.
What about the sacrifices that have to be made? In the film, we see a rider stop and wait for Christian to catch up. Now, I know if I was working that hard, I might think, hey, here's my chance.
Yeah, it's an incredible sacrifice. The sport is all about pain and all about sacrifice. Because even for the leader of the team, there is so much agony involved that I think it's very religious. I've come to see it as a very religious kind of sacrificial thing, that they're all sacrificing themselves on the altar of cycling itself, if that isn't too much to say.
Well, ballet dancers wind up having to have hip replacement surgery and knee replacement surgery. I'd assume the same sort of thing happens with these people.
Yeah, their bodies are wrecked.
Although they do talk about being unique specimens. They do see themselves as having had some kind of genetic luck, and that's why they could do it and I can't do it.
Yes, and I think one of the riders that we feature in the film doesn't have a great body, and they're constantly joking with him, and they call him Meatball and, you know, making fun of his weight, and he looks great, you know, by any normal standards, but for a cyclist, his body type is just a little chunky.
And you have to be lean, but at the same time have a lot of strength, obviously.
Yes, lean and powerful, and they all are. I mean, they are incredible specimens, and they take care of their bodies.
I'm assuming that even though you're not filming them this year, you've been following their progress.
I have.
Are they doing well?
They are. It's very hard to say because like I said before, it's not like there are standings. It's not clear, like, okay, they're in third place in the Eastern Division.
Well, have they won any big races?
They have won some big races. Christian actually won a stage of the Paris-Nice race, which is a big race. They did pretty well at the Giro. They've come very close to winning a couple of stages at the Giro, which is the Tour of Italy. Christian then broke his back about 6 or 7 weeks ago. So
he broke his back?
He broke his back at
How
the Giro.
How serious is that?
It's as serious as it sounds, but he has come back about as well as could be expected, and he's going to ride in the Tour, and it's anybody's guess as to whether or not he'll be, you know, at peak performance level.
That's almost as bad as the Mets, isn't it?
Nothing is as bad as the Mets. Do not get me started. Have you had Jerry Manuel on? I've got a lot of questions you could ask Jerry Manuel.
Nick Davis's film is called Blood, Sweat, and Gears, Racing Clean to the Tour de France. It's been screened on the Sundance Channel since Monday, and it's, as is often the case on the Sundance Channel and HBO and those other channels, you'll still have any number of opportunities to see it, and then, again, you can also see it on demand.
Yeah, and you can TiVo it. I think Saturday at 8 is the next sort of big moment for it.
And, of course, if this team, which is now called Garmin Slipstream,
yes.
Garmin, so that they always know where they are?
They always know where they are, exactly. And they know where they're going.
If they do well, I think everybody's going to want to see this film.
Oh, I hope so.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.